Good evening, everyone. It's wonderful to see you all. As some of you know, I was traveling for 2 weeks across the ocean in America, and so was not connecting here or with any of our wildflower activities, although I'm forever a wildflower and was never far because wherever I am is it, so is here, so I was with you all the time. Of course, it's different. I didn't give Dharma talks. I didn't meet in Indokusan. I didn't connect to Zoom. And yet, this is it. This is where I am, wherever I am. And that when, when you're in a different culture, in a different country, with all of the, attachments and memories and associations we have with wherever we are. Sometimes we can forget that this too is it. I, or we can forget that when we define things and categorize them and give them names, we miss what they truly are and who we truly are. And that was very apparent in many different moments. I was first in New York, and that's a very different city than Paris. And the energy is very different in Paris, and the size of things is very different. We can say the same thing about Paris and Lisbon, or Paris and Pont de Paris, or we can make all kinds of comparisons. And when we hold to those comparisons and those differences that we make, then we miss just things as they are. And it's very easy when you're in a place as extreme as New York with, buildings that are so big and bright and so many of them and, gleaming towers on this very small island that is Manhattan. So, things don't go far distance-wise or very deep because, it's an island and it's, the Dutch founded it and the Dutch are familiar with this kind of land that is forever, in danger of being overrun by the ocean. A lot of the edges of it was originally swampland, and the Dutch conquered it and then the Americans bought it from the Dutch or took it over from the Dutch. And then made it their own. And so everything goes up. It doesn't go very far down or very far wide. It goes up. And the roots aren't very deep. And you can feel this. You can feel it in the behavior, in the landscape, in the energy and the frenzy of life in New York. It's very tiring. And yet, the first day we took a ferry. My sister lives across the East River in what's another borough, which is not Manhattan, but Queens, which is another borough. And we took a ferry that people use to commute to Manhattan. It's not very far, It's kind of like commuting across the Seine or something. Or maybe, the Taj And it's more like Lisbon, actually, because the ocean is there too, and the two rivers run into the ocean there. It's like an estuary on the end. But so you take this ferry, and people use it to commute, so it only costs, it doesn't cost very much. And yet you have this fabulous view of Manhattan. And it makes a number of stops until it left us off at Wall Street, famous Wall Street, which we have associations with. And we walked from Wall Street to what used to be, 25 years ago, the World Trade Center. Actually, there were two of them, but they're no longer there. And there's a memorial there now, which is absolutely stunning. Instead of building up, they dug down and made two pools with cascading water down, reflecting pools. And just around the pools are engraved all of the names of the people who were in those buildings that died when they collapsed. Very sober, very un-American in style, you know. And yet, well, I say un-American in the sense that there's nothing flashy about it and nothing big, very sober and moving. And yet, throughout all of this, you know, if I'm thinking, oh, this is New York, this is Wall Street, this is the World Trade Center, if I'm thinking about all of these things, then I'm not really experiencing it. If I'm looking at those people on the boat, and a lot of them were tourists like us, because it's a cheap, you know, you can pay $100 and, you know, ride around on a boat and have dinner around Manhattan on the rivers, but you can pay $4 and just have this, you know, fabulous, it was a beautiful sunny day, this fabulous ride in the river. Tourists like us from all different countries, you know. And if I start thinking, why would they want to come to America as tourists? Then I miss just who these people are and just being with them and sharing this experience with them. If I start thinking about the whole story of the World Trade Center and, you know, whatever, everything we know about 9/11 and all that, I miss just this really pure moment of just being there with this cascading water. Everybody was really silent. There was nothing else really happening there because the whole universe was happening there, right then and there. It was really, really profound. And then, you know, fast forward to 2 weeks later when I came back to New York and went to the No Kings March, which was across America that day. 7 million people went into the streets to protest. And because I happened to be in New York, I went with my sister and my brother-in-law and their friends to the march in New York. 100,000 people in on 7th Avenue, you know, like between Times Square and 14th Street. So that's like 30 blocks, something like that. 100,000 people. And that too, you know, there really was nothing. It's just people walking in the street. There were no speaker, you know, there were no political people making speeches. People had signs or not. Some people were dressed up in these funny costumes, which now is the is becoming what people do at these demonstrations to show that, you know, the fascist government is saying that they are terrorists, they hate America, they're dangerous. And yet, so people are wearing these silly costumes, you know, like dressing as a unicorn or a fairy or a pumpkin or just these silly costumes. Also, you know, carrying American flags, which, you know, the other side is trying to make the flag theirs, you know, and telling these people that they hate America, but they don't hate America. They just don't want to have a king, you know, and live under a fascist government. So, very quiet. You know, nothing. There were some chants, but funny things. Nothing. No police presence really, hardly at all. The people making sure that the march stayed instead of going off into the cross streets, instead of police, with marchers I've been in Paris, it's the police who do that. These were people in yellow vests who are part of the organization, stewards, they call themselves. And then when we got to 14th Street, there was nothing, no big event, no speakers or anything. People just went off to in their day. There too, you know, it was, if I stopped thinking about us and them and right and wrong and making a statement or something, I really was just walking in the street with these people. We just shared that 2 hours of walking together down the street. I don't know if everyone felt that way, and it doesn't matter. It's what I felt. For me, that was the universe right there. And I was thinking of, you know, come of these things like, I forget who it was, one of the desert fathers, you know, the famous early Christian hermits who went into the desert in, I guess, what is now Israel, probably. And they lived in caves and they were hermits. And at one point, someone who was visiting the hermits, an early Christian, you know, came and visited and said, but saw the way that this guy was living and he had nothing. And he said, but you don't even have a Bible. And the desert father said, I don't need a Bible. I just look out of my cave and all of the teaching is there, the universe is there. And this is so simple. And that's really what our practice is, you know, just this right here, right now. So it can be walking in the streets of Manhattan with 100,000 people. It can be sitting on a ferry boat with, I don't know, 25 people. It can be sitting in my office here in front of my computer screen. Can be feeding my cat. Whatever it is, that's it. And traveling is a really good opportunity to realize this. Sitting is the best way, probably, because we just, there's nothing to hang on to, right? It's just this posture, just this room, just this place, just this cushion, just this. And we may have techniques that we use to heighten our awareness, keep us present, remind us, whatever it is. But actually, we don't need any of that. The limitation is helpful, you know, to have a time limit, a space limit. We sit in a certain way, in a certain place, a certain amount of time. That's why I always say to people, just give yourself 5 minutes or 10 minutes and don't go longer than that. It really helps to have that limit, that limitation. And always try to sit in the same place in your home. This is if you're not in a retreat with others when or sitting online like this. Give yourself that limitation because it really helps to realize it. So it seems like a paradox that limiting it to right here, right now, very strictly, and leaving your home and traveling the world, which just seems to be the opposite, are both fabulous practices of realizing the universe here and now. And as Alan Watts famously says, a paradox, and Zen is full of paradox, right? A paradox is just a paradox is only a truth that is standing on its head to attract attention, which is really interesting to think of a paradox. Because, so think of any paradox you can imagine. So like I'm saying, really small and really big are both ways of realizing the universe, are both realizing the universe right now. That's a paradox. But it's really just a truth hang standing on its head, so we'll pay attention to it. We say a minute or an hour is eternity. Well, a minute and an hour aren't the same thing. Neither is eternity. That's a paradox, a truth standing on its head, so we'll look at it. And our practice is full of those. Koans are full of paradox like that. And to attract our attention, to bring us away from the usual way of thinking of things, these paradox, it's wonderful. It's really powerful. So then, in between my New York bookends, I visited with my mother in another city completely, in Minneapolis, the city where I grew up and lived until I came to France. So until I was 21. And have not visited very often because my parents didn't live there anymore. And so when I would come back to the United States, of course, I visited my parents and my siblings came there and the whole family went where my parents were. So I didn't really go back to Minneapolis much. So I haven't really experienced how it's changed. And my reference points are old, like 45 years old. And so to spend 8 days there, in a completely different context, because my mother also now has moved back there. She had not lived there for 45 years either. And she's living in a residence for elder people, elderly. So she's also changed completely her points of reference. The city, the state, the way she lives in an apartment, she no longer drives a car. Everything is different for her. And as it was for me coming there. And I actually stayed in the residence, not in her apartment. There's a guest apartment for families, which is wonderful. So I was living just upstairs from her with my husband and my son, with all of these old people, elderly people. We say old, but the funny thing was that if I didn't think of those people as being old or young, or me being old or young, or my son being old or young, if I didn't think of all of those things, those people were just like me, Of course, they have walkers and they're in wheelchairs or they have canes. A lot of them have health issues. But so do I, I mean, I have just the same, old age sickness and death as they do. I just have the same greed, anger, and ignorance as they do. I am just being as they are being. If I didn't, and sometimes I would forget even that they were older, that they were elderly. Not that I was forgetting who they were and where they were in the stage of life, but I wasn't fixing them in that category. And so I had some wonderful conversations with these people. And at one point, one of them told me that I was talking about how my mother is fairly recent there. She just moved there in May. And so she's still kind of becoming acquainted and meeting people and whatever. And so this woman who had been there for some time said, well, it's really like high school here. High school is, for those of you who aren't American, it's, when you're like between 15 and 18. And she said, there's groups of friends. And they all sit together at lunch at the same tables all the time, or at dinner, And as soon as she said that, suddenly I realized it. It clarified things. I could see that happening. I wouldn't have thought of it if she hadn't situated it in that category, you know. But it was clearly what I was observing. And observing my mother then and some of her difficulties because she's new to this. So she has to make her way. She has to find a place at a table to eat when she eats in the dining room. And she has to see people that she sits and talks to and things like that. And I felt great compassion for my mother when I realized that at her age, having to do that and having left, you know, the past 25 years, she'd lived in one place and had friends and activities. And she had to do that when she moved there 25 years ago, but she was 25 years younger. She's now 97. It's not so easy, you know. And I thought, you know, it's the same. Whether my son who's 30, he has to deal with that kind of thing. My grandson, who's almost two, has to deal with that kind of thing in daycare. All of us have to deal with that kind of thing in our lives. And we're just being who we are right now at this moment. And I think probably something in my mother is ex You know, my mother is always what she seems as she always has to me. Although, of course, she's changed and she's aged and, but, you know, other things. She's my mother, you know. And I think maybe all of us have a sense sometimes that there's something in us. It's who we truly are, actually, which is who we truly are when we were five. Or who we truly are were when 10 years ago, or who we truly are yesterday. Although it's changing all the time. Maybe that's the one thing that is common, is that it's changing all the time. Another paradox, right? Another truth standing on its head, so we'll look at it. Well, who am I? Am I the same thing I was when I was 5 years old, or am I something different? Am I the one who's thinking, or am I the thought? Who am I? You know, these are just paradoxes, truth standing on their head. And as I went about living, you know, this city that I always knew, you know, the only city I ever knew until I was 21, really, apart from traveling. And yet, so much has changed. And so much had not changed. And my feeling of it had not changed. And then I took my son and my husband to the neighborhood where I grew up, the house where I lived when I was a child, you know, school, the elementary school I went to, everything. And my son was like, wow. Mom, he said in French, tu viens de loin. You come from far, you know, tu viens vraiment de loin, which means, wow, you really came from far away. Until that moment, I never thought of that. Never, ever thought of that. I still am not quite sure what he was referring to, you know. But of course, he's only known me here in my Parisian existence, you know. And so I don't really know what he saw there, but it really struck him. And maybe for him, it was that it's so different, that place that I grew up from where he grew up, that, you know, wow. And yet I'm not. I mean, he didn't know me then, but I'm not. Another paradox, right? And then my husband said to both of us, he said, well, I don't have to take you to where I grew up because you live next door to where I grew up. Because it's true, he grew up in the house where there is now the Dana Zen Center. And that's also something interesting, you know, that's also quite mind-blowing. So here he is. He didn't go anywhere, and I came, you know, from far away. Here we are back at that paradox again. And yet, it's always the whole universe wherever we are. You know, there, if we've, and in that sense, you know, where is the center then? You know, where is the universe? Where is the center of the universe? Well, if we really looked at it, we can't find it because it's all the center. So when I'm in New York, is that the center? And, you know, people are in Paris doing something and there's 6 hours time difference. Then I'm in Minneapolis doing something, and that's an hour time difference from New York. And, you know, all of these, or, you know, I heard this weekend where time, there's the time is changing here. I didn't even know about that until today. Well, so then what time is it really? We have this thing where, oh, at 2 o'clock in the morning, it won't be two, it will be one, you know. Well, it's always now. You know, we have this framework that we use to keep time, but it's always now and it's always here. And this is the center. But so is that. The chair my cat's sleeping on is the center, and this is the center. And where you're sitting is the center. No matter what, where you are, who you are, that's the center. And traveling is really an interesting way of experiencing this. And if I don't mean to give you the impression that I was thinking about this all the time. I wasn't. Because if as soon as I would start thinking about it, well, then it wasn't that anymore. Occasionally, it would be, occasionally something would happen, you know, and I would think of it. I had an altercation with an airline person at the airport, and I got caught up in the altercation. And then suddenly I realized I was caught up in it and I dropped it. When I'm caught up in it, I'm really separate from the universe. This is the universe. I'm caught up and she's wrong. I'm right. You know, you're not hearing me, whatever, you know. And then suddenly I could hear it. Suddenly the universe was right there. And I said, okay, I understand you're not to blame for this. Okay. And then I said, you know, can you understand my position? And she said, yes, I can. She could say that because I had said it, you know. And then, okay, you know, she may have carried that around and despised me, probably. I don't know. But, or maybe not. Maybe she just moved on to the next person. I don't And then as we left and started walking, my husband said to me, drop it. And he was right. You know, we have that Zen story where there's two monks on a pilgrimage and they come to a river and there's a woman who needs to cross the river and there's no bridge. And she wants them to help her across. So one of the monk picks her up and carries her across I think it was a stream probably, and carries her across the stream, puts her down, and then the monks go on walking. And 2 hours later, the other monk said to his brother, I can't believe you touched that woman, because monks were not supposed to touch women. And I can't believe you touched her. And the monk said, well, I put her down 2 hours ago. You're still carrying her. And so I thought of that, you know, and I put the story down on the moving walkway and walked on, you know, walked on to my gate or to the security or whatever it was, you know. Because I saw in the middle of it just this, just this. It's not, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's not, it's okay. It's what it is, you know. And it ended up in the end, it was a story about paying for a bag to check twice. because I had paid for it online when I checked in online. And then when I came to the airport, it said I hadn't paid. And yet I had the receipt for it on my smartphone, the proof of payment, receipt, all this. And when I got to the counter, she said, "Well, no, in my computer, it doesn't show that you paid, so you have to pay for it." So, of course, I was really furious that I was going to have to pay for this bag twice. And she said, "You're not going to have to pay for this bag twice." And I said, "Well, I paid for it online, and here's the proof to say that I paid for it." She said, "My computer doesn't show that." So I, was like, "Well," I said, "you're asking me to take your word for it by what you see on your computer, but you're not taking my word for it, but what I see on my screen," whatever, In the end, when I got to my destination and looked at my bank, I hadn't it hadn't gone through for some reason. Was the airline's fault. Something went wrong with the airline's thing, but she was right. And if she wasn't, well, she said, you can go back to the airline and say they'll see that you paid for it twice and they'll reimburse you. Whatever. Doesn't really matter what the details were, was the fact that we can at every moment just come back to the entire universe is here right now. This is it, as what's his name? I think it's Tozan, who, upon seeing his reflection in the water, he wrote this poem that don't try to seek for yourself, don't try to figure out who you are. When you go your own way, wherever, when you go the way, when you just stay present, we could say, when you don't get caught up in the right and wrong and all of that, wherever you turn, where he said, wherever I turn, I meet myself. And he added, you are not it, it is you. So wherever you turn, you meet yourself. I met myself with that woman there. When I could let go of, her and me, right and wrong. Rumi, there's a out beyond right and wrong, there's a field. I will meet you there. That's where love and peace is, out beyond the right and wrong. And yet it's not out beyond. Another paradox. It's right here. So I will stop now. It's a long talking stint, and see if you have anything to share or questions or comments.
Thank you for taking us with you on your travel to America. It was very nice to visit all those places with you, through you.
Thank you.
And Christine and Tiago and the other day. Now I can't remember where you went, Christine. There was somebody at the retreat at Joa's who had been to Dharamsalam, I think, and he'd been to India and had worked for the Dalai Lama. So we started swapping traveling stories. I did Africa for a while, and you and I had similar experiences, Christine, but I don't remember what country that you talked about. But it's true that the minute you start leaving your familiar environment, it sharpens something. It opens eyes. It does it. Well, maybe also because your habits don't work, you have to be more present. You have to stay on your toes. We were talking about being taken in by gentlemen were as travelers, gentlemen who said, "Oh, well, you can stay in my hotel room," and you think, "I don't know if there, is this okay?" And it was okay, but you have to really be, stay on your toes when you're traveling as a woman, and probably as a man alone too. When you're traveling alone, that you don't know who you're dealing with, you don't know exactly what they're proposing. You need help all the time, so it's a way of being very, very, very close to the present moment in any case. Yeah, it's funny, we discussed that for quite a long time Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning.
Thank you. Well, and I did actually, when I was at my No Kings March, I did think of you all on retreat on Saturday. Although with the time difference, you were probably asleep or something, but I did think of you.
And also, thank you so much for going to that demonstration. I for me for us.
Yeah, I was going to say that also. Thank you so much. It was, I think the for me the really beautiful part, this the really touched me of this Dharma talk was the 7 million marching in a non-political way, making a lot of noise in a silence way. Silence way. Thank you. It was very beautiful for you. I almost forgot it. I knew it, but it was thank you. My highlight for tonight.
Well, and a kind of less beautiful thing was I had to apply for a new driver's license because I changed my address from my mother's residence to my sister's residence in a different state. And so I went and filled out the form and everything, name, address, height, weight, color of eyes, everything, sex. And then it came to race. It was optional. It was optional, right? And they had all these categories of race, Asian, black, white, Latino, all these different things, other. And I thought, I'm going to put white, I'm going to do it just to see what they do with that. It was optional, right? So I did it. And then she gave me back, when she entered it all in the computer, she gave me back the form to sign it to be sure that everything was okay. And by race, it didn't say white. It said not Hispanic or Latino, which is really telling. The Hispanics and the Latinos in America today are the ones that they don't want, So they didn't care if I was white or black or Asian or something. They only cared if I was Latino or Hispanic. Now, I don't know if that will actually appear on my driver's license. But that was quite stunning, actually. Debbie, yeah.
What state was this in?
Minnesota. Which is, one of the
Is
most
it?
democratic leftist
Ah,
states and cities in the United States. It's like Chicago and New York, and it's one of the city and San Francisco, it's one of the cities that will be, probably have troops coming in, so I don't know. I don't know if it's a federal thing or what. I don't know.
wow.
But that was kind
I
of
find that very
disturbing.
shocking, actually,
Yeah,
yeah.
very disturbing. Yeah. And that, as we can see, comes from, having frames and references and categorizing people. When you drive, who cares what, what color you are, what race you are, even how tall you are, what color eyes you have. I don't really know why they have to know those things, but they do. your pictures on it, so I know. But in any case, that was not such a glowing moment. But spoke of the three poisons, you know, as well.
Thanks for sharing all this. You said at some point that you didn't think about it being the center of the universe while you were being the center of the universe when you were visiting and seeing and all that you shared. But at the same time, your experience was different from someone who doesn't realize he's or she is the center of the universe. How is it different or not?
Well, I'm not so sure it's different, because I think all of us, everyone has moments most of the time when we're not really thinking about it. We're just doing whatever we're doing, you know. We just, you know, we just fall asleep, or we're just walking down the street. We're not thinking about how we're walking, what kind of shoes we're wearing. We're just that. It's just that. However, we are so conditioned and so, you know, it's steeped in all of the stuff that we've been told and taught, you know, told by other people, told by our parents, taught at school, taught by our experience of separation, you know. So you see this on your driver's license. Oh, so what's important is that I'm not Hispanic. And so then you just believe that. But most of the time, you're not walking around thinking you're Hispanic or white or whatever. You just are just here, you know. So the difference would be that, you know, having awakened to non-separation, to the oneness, I have less tendency to engage in that separation. It's easier for me to drop it. And because we train, you know, we practice and we practice and we sit and we sit and we sit. And I've been doing this, you know, for like more than 30 years. It's just more familiar than someone who has never done that. It doesn't mean that you have to do that to awaken to oneness and be aware of non-separation. It doesn't mean that. But for me, that is how I have managed to become free. And you know, again, Alan Watts, you know, he says that, you know, awakening or spiritual growth or whatever you want to call it, it's just to love and be at one with life in all its aspects. Which is not so easy if we haven't experienced the oneness, you know, that if we haven't let ourselves become free from all of the frames and the categories and discriminations we're so attached to. So I don't think that it's that different from other people. Other people, who's other people? You know, I mean, it's like, I don't know. But just to, you know, what you're saying, I hear what you're saying. I don't think the experience is necessarily different, the basic experience, but then what we make of it and how we quickly. So if I'm saying, oh, I am in the center, well, then I'm no longer in the center because I'm putting myself separate from everything. And that awareness changes then how we experience things. I'm not sure if that answered the question, but. Fundamentally, under all of the decorations and all of the discriminations and categories and, you know, positions, it's all one. What is experienced is one. thing, one it, you know. But it becomes buried under all the other stuff that we put on it.
Right, and not everybody can say it and see it.
They
See it and
can.
say it.
They can. Yes, they
They
can.
can, but
But they maybe don't because they're still struggling with all that other stuff. As we all, you know, I struggled with it at the airport with that lady, you know. I didn't want to pay $70 for a bag, pay it twice, you know. And I even said to her, let's just acknowledge that it's outrageous that we have to pay for a bag when I was in the throe of it all, you know. She said nothing. She didn't say yes and she didn't say no. I don't know if she agreed or not, but I said it, you know, so whatever. So we still all be, I'm not saying I don't get caught in it. I do. But just the familiarity I have with not being caught helps me not get caught and helps me see when I am caught. And then, oof, I can be free of it and, you know, move with ease, and at home with whatever it is. And everyone has that possibility. If I didn't believe that in my, you know, into the core of my being, I wouldn't be sitting here doing what I do. Because I know everybody can experience that.
Just one thought about that. I think we can't experience something else than being the center of the universe. We can't experience our life like someone else. So everybody's in the center of his universe. But maybe if I understand it right, it's more the awareness of oneness, maybe that makes the difference that I am one of, I'm the center, but I'm at one with everybody around and everything around, which might not necessarily be the case for everybody to, well, which is definitely not the case for everybody, if not our world wouldn't be the way it is. So.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
And I still remember that before meeting you and the teachings, I felt very separate. I was a lot in separation, and yeah, and the feeling of how you function in the world is also very different when you feel that way.
Exactly. And I probably everybody on that screen knows this screen knows exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I know I do. That's how I felt. I always thought everybody else knew and I didn't. They all had it figured out and they were functioning just fine and I didn't know what I was lost, you know. So yeah, that's key. And that brings up great compassion to realize that, to know that that's what people are feeling, each in their own way, you know, and not all the time. You know, but to acknowledge that and then to therefore then we can have compassion and treat people differently, which then helps their experience be different of that moment too.
Yes, because if feeling like the center of the universe is the same as I'm above the others, or you know, like people sometimes do when they compare or need to, you know, in that separate mode of having to prove something and putting themselves. That's also being in the center of their universe, but in a very different way, a very egocentrical way.
That's right. And when we're doing that, we're not seeing the oneness.
Yeah.
the wholeness.
Yeah, thanks, Christine, for adding that because that's what I was trying to ask, and that's what enables you to say, I wasn't thinking about it, but also talk about, I mean, share this experience of oneness. That's what I mean.
Well, and I think that the because we see so much, to such an extreme, the opposite behavior, world leaders and, stuff, the celebrities and whatever, is so much about the opposite, if we talk in terms of dualities of, self-centered and I'm great and narcissist and whatever, and exploitation of others and everything, that it's quite remarkable. Just, and I felt this when I was walking in the street in New York. It's really quite remarkable, this movement that's happening in the United States, because, and I think it will be the saving grace at some point of that country, that the one thing we all just shared, that we were doing this together in the streets. And it was in every state in America, 50 states, in small towns with 10 people, 100,000 in New York, 200,000 in Washington, which is huge, big, small, but everyone was just walking in the street together. And there's a way of that's a huge statement, about what is valued. What people are valuing. They're not valuing celebrity or putting people on pedestals or, engaging in rampant capitalism or something. Nobody was selling anything. There was nothing. There wasn't even like food or anything being sold on the street, in New York, which is like, capitalist capital of the world. And what was striking too was that the shops were all open in Paris. I kept saying to these people I was with, "Are you kidding me? In Paris, those shops would be boarded up. Nobody would park their cars on those streets. It would be like, whoa, there would be vandalism and, conflict and fighting in the street and everything." Shops were open, but nobody really. Some people were just going about their business, but it was not about commerce. It wasn't about I am great or celebrity or identity even. Everybody was one walking in the street together. It's the together part that is important.
Amy, did people talk to each other?
Yeah.
I mean, people that didn't know each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were families with little kids. There were old people, people like with their walkers, young people. The one thing that I remarked was it wasn't really racially diverse. But that's because it was Manhattan and Manhattan, so whatever. And yeah, people talked to each other and commented on their signs and some chanting and stuff. But it was not about big or small, or famous or not famous, or selling anything. That's
They
what we're
talked to
talking
each
about.
other about the political situation. Did it become political or
Not
political?
really. People would
No.
comment on the signs, because
Yeah.
there were lots of funny signs and things. Not really. The signs we were carrying, my sister's friend, who's like a real militant, had made these signs that it was her sign said banned words, because there's a lot of words that have been banned by this government. And if you put those words on your social media, they track you and they can follow you, so words like the word I was carrying was people. My husband was carrying green. My sister was carrying gender. These are like trigger words. So we were just walking with this sign that said banned words, and then we had these signs with these words, and people liked it, and so they asked to take pictures of it and things. But apart from that, it wasn't particularly particular. I heard that in some of the demonstrations, there were some Trump people who came with their red MAGA hats and provoking, like screaming transphobic phrases or anti-gay stuff or, stuff like this, and trying to provoke so that there would be violence. But people just ignored them and kept and just walked. Not entering into the divisions and the separation and things. So that's kind of an application of our practice right there, of Sangha. And it looks like we're about out of time. So thank you all for being here and sharing.